Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 87.
Hello and welcome to Straight and Curly. We're going to kick off with reading one of our beautiful reviews because it's just so lovely and it makes us feel happy and we're going to do it. So this one is from Chelsea PT. She says, well worth a listen. Carly and Kelly always have great advice and the way they bounce off each other is so much fun. You feel like you're just in your lounge room chatting to two good mates.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Thank you, Chelsea. Like as regular listeners will know, we love nothing better than to hear people feel like we're their friend. We love getting those reviews where it's like, I feel like this is my friend Kelly and Carly. Like this is amazing that they're part of the conversation with us. So if you, like Chelsea, enjoy the show and want to help us with the gods of iTunes, the best way to do that is to leave a review of your own and also subscribe to the show. So I think we're close to 100 reviews now at time of recording, but you know, so we'll have hit our goal of hitting 100 reviews before the end of the year, but don't let that stop you from leaving another great one for us. So Carls, on with the show. What are we talking about today?
So this week we're going to be talking about 10 lifestyle detoxes we should all try at least once. So what do we even mean by a lifestyle detox? It simply means taking something out of your life for a bit. So it might be a day, a week, a month, and seeing whether doing so makes your life better. So sometimes you take a thing out and then decide to keep it and put it back in. Sometimes taking the thing out allows you to hit a reset button. And sometimes you take a thing out and you never ever return to it because you have decided you don't need it in your life. So lifestyle detoxes are a really fun way to experiment, aren't they, Kel?
Yeah, they are. And I guess this is a point where we just need to reiterate something we have said in previous shows. So when we talk about self-experimentation, we always take a do-no-harm approach. We encourage people to be very responsible with how they go about trying things like this. So, you know, we're not going to experiment with living on air for a week as that is clearly potentially harmful or, you know, doing the lemon detox diet or anything crazy like that. So, you know, we only really experiment with things that are not harmful to us or also important, the people around us. So it's all well and good to like, you know, I don't know, a friend, one of the people in the group, Jen Morton, like she did an experiment where she didn't speak for the weekend.
Whoa.
And to me, like that was like, whoa, that's pretty intense and pretty cool for an article, but also it's impactful on the people around you. So it might not be the kind of thing we would necessarily advocate that you do. So yeah.
I also couldn't get through your sentence of saying not speaking without speaking. So clearly I'm not going to be very good at that.
Whoa, Kelly, no way.
Oh, I couldn't even imagine it. Yeah. In her article, Jen talks about like, you know, these retreats where people go for like, they go 10 days without speaking and stuff. And I'm just like, I'm a quiet person and even I'm like, I would need to speak. I could not, you know, I just couldn't do it. So anyway, today we're going to work through kind of 10 lifestyle detoxes that we've both tried over the years. There's stuff we've done. There's been some suggestions from the group as well, but we both have experience with all of these things. And the first one is something that we have spoken about before in an episode. And we also speak about it in our book, A Real Life Approach to Diet and Lifestyle Detoxes. And that is no alcohol for a month. So Carls, you're the drinker in this partnership. So.
I am the drinker in most partnerships. So I do this quite often and I highly recommend it to everyone. This year I went alcohol free for the first 3 months of the year. I didn't have alcohol from January to March 31st, which was my brother's wedding. And it was fantastic. So it's the longest I've gone without alcohol as an adult. And I felt very clear and very focused and my skin looked amazing. Yeah. It was so good. It showed me the biggest thing it showed me was that alcohol takes up a lot of time. So when you drink, you stay later at parties, you attend more parties, you sleep in a bit later, you feel a bit shitter the next day. The main thing I got out of that was the extraordinary gift of time. Look, I adore wine and I love having a few drinks, but going cold turkey for a while is an extremely good thing. And Kelly and I have both spoken before about the Australian drinking culture and how ridiculously unhealthy it is. And it's, I think it's the less people who drink and participate wholeheartedly and consistently in that culture, the better we're going to be at changing that culture and turning ourselves into the type of drinkers that people are in Europe, where you can sit on your front doorstep and have a glass of wine without beating the shit out of someone that just walked past you because you overdid it and had 15 beers before lunchtime.
Yeah, that's right. The Australian drinking culture is very much, you know, go hard or go home. And you just, you know, there's been a lot of research into the deleterious effects of binge drinking, which is very much how Australians drink. And also the effects of drinking every single day. So the standard drinks kind of guidelines that we have in our country, and I'm sure other countries have them, they're not saying this is a safe amount of alcohol to drink, because there is actually no safe amount of alcohol to drink. They're just saying that if you're trying to be moderate about how much alcohol you drink, drink this much. But ultimately, it's not healthy to drink every day. And another kind of mini detox you could do, if like a whole month without alcohol just seems a step too far, is you can do something that Carly suggested in one of our previous shows, where you only drink on Friday and Saturday. So Friday night and Saturday night. And then you're alcohol free on all the other nights of the week. And then that way, you know, you can still go out and have a few, but you're not binge drinking on the weekend and then supplementing that with drinking every single night as well. Because when you combine those two things, daily drinking with binge drinking on the weekend, that's pretty much the most harmful way to drink, basically.
I also, like, at this particular time of year, November, December kind of time, it's really difficult to avoid drinking constantly because there's drinking everywhere. One thing I do is that if I want to have a bit of an alcohol detox at a busy time of year when there's lots of social occasions, I don't drink unless I'll say I'm not drinking for a month and I'll start from today, but I can drink on all of the things I pre-booked.
Yes.
So for instance, I'm going to the theater with some girlfriends next Friday. So if at the moment I'm not drinking for the next month, but I can drink at the theater dinner that I'm going to with some girls next weekend. I had to review a restaurant on the weekend and I was allowed to drink then. And I've got my concert that I go to every year and I'm allowed to drink then. So those are my three occasions that I'm allowed to drink in the next month.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to do it, is like, so don't take it completely, you know, completely out of rotation, but maybe, as you say, pre-book them and on the calendar. And then you say all the other days of this month, I'm not drinking on those days. So the second lifestyle detox that
defox
is no coffee for a month. And I did this detox because when we did the alcohol detox, I was like, because I don't really drink a lot and it's very easy for me to go for a month without drinking. And I was just like, oh, when you go to the pub, like just have a soda lime and bitters or something, like, you know, and that's, you know, and that way you're still having a drink, but it's not alcoholic.
And I'm like, shut up, Kelly, you don't know me.
And then I thought maybe, and everyone was a bit like, it's not that easy. And I'm like, sure it is. And then I thought, okay, what's something that I drink very, very regularly? Let me give up that thing and just see how hard it is. So I gave up coffee for a month. And I can't believe how hard it was. And I can't believe in particular how galling it was to go to a coffee shop. And this is what we do in, I don't know about the rest of the world, but in Perth and in Australia, this is what we do. We go to cafes and we have coffee and that's our entertainment. And going to a cafe and having a pot of tea, it just didn't cut it. It just made me so angry. In the end, I just didn't go to cafes because it was just like, I cannot go to a cafe and not have a coffee. It just is so wrong to me. So I had to apologize to everyone who I was like, oh, if you go into the pub, just have a sparkling water. Because I could see how that just wouldn't cut it. But that said, it was really interesting to experiment on giving up coffee for a month because, interestingly, there's no data that says drinking coffee is bad for us. Certainly if you're drinking black coffee, you know, you can have up to like four long blacks a day, and the studies have shown like it has no bad effects on your body or how you function unless you're particularly sensitive to caffeine and it triggers anxiety. But if you're that person, then you're not drinking coffee because you can't, you just wouldn't. But I found it interesting to give it up to see if it had any effect on me. And disturbingly, it did. It altered my mood for the better. I would never have thought that coffee would have a adverse effect on my mood personally. I'm not saying this is true for everyone, but for me, it yeah, going off coffee helped my mood. And I was like, what do I do now? I quite like being in a good mood all the time, but I really, really like coffee. So what I do now, I've seen Sarah Wilson suggest this as well. So if I find my mood is just a bit off base and I can't think of any other reason for it, I will go off coffee for about 3 days, and I usually find that kind of resets me. I've also seen Sarah Wilson, who's the I Quit Sugar person over here. She mentions that she just has a couple of coffee-free days a week, and that has the same kind of effect. So yeah, I would be interested to hear from other people who've self-experimented with this, whether it had any kind of a positive effect on their life and have stayed off it. Like, because you, Carl, you're neither here nor there with coffee. You're
I'm a peer pressure coffee drinker. So unless other people are drinking it or I'm at a cafe, it won't occur to me to drink it. I'm very suggestible when it comes to coffee. I'll be like, oh, right, coffee exists. Sure, I'll have one. So I didn't do the thing the first time around because I didn't really feel the need to, but I randomly gave up coffee in the middle of my last F45 challenge. And I honestly can't say my life is worse without it. So I'll occasionally have one on the weekend, or if I'm super desperate during the week, I'll have one in the afternoon, but I just sleep so much better without it. Mm. And don't quote me, but I suspect I lose more weight if I lose weight more efficiently without it.
I can't prove it. Yeah.
But every time I stop drinking it conscientiously, I find weight loss a lot easier. It could be that I'm not having all the dairy that I had with it, though. It could be giving up the 1 to 2 cups of milk every day.
It stimulates your adrenal glands. So I think it depends how sensitive you are to it with regard to your adrenal gland. Because it definitely, I have seen anecdotally that if you are struggling, like you've got like a little bit of belly fat and you're doing everything right and you cannot, but you just can't get rid of this last little bit of belly fat, quite often coming off coffee is like, it's what helps. And I'm not sure about the physiological drivers behind that, but certainly anecdotally I've seen that to be a thing, really.
Well, giving up coffee on the last F45 challenge helped me get my waist under the healthy heart limit, which is I think 80 centimeters for women, and that was one of the things I did to get my waist measurement into the healthy zone. I can't say it was completely that, but that was definitely one of the things that I was doing while that happened. So, you know, who knows, but that's interesting information.
Oh, that's awesome. And congrats to you, Carls, because any regular listener of the show will know that it's been a real frustration for you, and I can confirm this, that Carly does everything right with regard to exercise and
I really do
and has always found it very, very difficult to shift the weight. And it's awesome to hear that it's shifting for you. And
it is, which is brilliant. Really good. And I've got a very sustainable system that I'm working with at the moment that's going very well. So I'm going to keep doing it because it's very easy. Yeah. Not easy, like I'm very disciplined, but it's definitely not painful.
Yeah.
So the next one that we've got is no processed / packet food for a month. So to be honest, I do this most of the time anyway because I eat mainly vegetables and meat that I get from the butcher. The only things that I really eat in packages are goat's cheese, dark chocolate, and wine. I make pretty much everything else. And so one thing I recently cut down on, and I wasn't sure, like with this lifestyle detox, are we detoxing for health reasons or for environmental reasons?
Health.
Okay.
Certainly with the whole no processed packet food thing, that's a health.
Yeah.
Thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the reason why is because most processed, when I say packet food, like if it's like spaghetti and there's 2 ingredients in it, that's okay. Or rice, because it's just rice, but it's more the fact that, you know, when there's 10 ingredients.
Like frozen meals.
Yeah. And you just, you know, you don't recognize half the things in there. The reason is processed food generally full of sugar, full of salt, low in nutrients. So yeah, removing the processed packet food from your life allows you to, yeah, it forces you to make more of your food. It forces you to eat food closer to the source, which is obviously healthier. So, but yes. You keep going, Carl.
So one thing I've cut down on recently was drinks. So when you eat as strictly as I do and you want a food reward, you kind of end up in this weird drink zone where you're kind of like, oh, I'm going to get a Diet Coke or a kombucha or some sort of a stupid low sugar almond milk coffee piece of shit. It's like super fun, guys. So I've tried to cut down on those a lot because I found myself, I found this particular brand of kombucha that had kombucha is like a really disappointing diet soft drink. It's I actually quite like it. It's a fermented tea.
I quite like it
drink.
As well. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not for everyone, and if you're expecting a delicious, you know, fancy soft drink, that's not what it is. It's it's an acquired taste.
It tastes like fizzy sock, I reckon.
I quite like it.
I like it too, heavy. But I can't believe I'm admitting to liking what something that tastes like fizzy sock.
I just think that my standards of because I haven't had traditional junk food in about 10 years. So when I find something that just even remotely resembles
even
a glass of
ballpark.
Sugary Coke, I'm like, this is fine. It's fine.
You'll be eating one square of 95% dark chocolate next.
Oh yeah, no, I've gone to the 95%. Oh my god, we're just horrible health nuts. So I found this kombucha that I really liked, and it had something like 10 calories in it. And I was thinking, well, this is fantastic. Like, I'm going to drink this. And I'm like, I'm going to have my little bottle of fizzy sock. And then I just started drinking all kombucha, and I just grab any bottle of kombucha.
Oh, yes.
And some of them are full of sugar. Yeah. Some of them have 100 calories. Some of them have 120. So I think just I've stopped doing that now because it's unnecessary calories, and I drink a lot of water and tea anyway, so it's kind of so I've cut down a little bit on that recently, and plus also for environmental reasons. I think single serve beverages in plastic bottles aren't really necessary.
Yeah.
And they're also like they're a waste of money. They're not particularly necessary. They're bad for the environment and usually bad for me. So I kind of have removed myself a bit from that. But having said that, I bloody love a Diet Coke. So like once or twice a week, I'll get one of those like frosty little cans of Diet Coke or no sugar Coke, and I'm just all over that. So yeah. But that's my thing. So
that's like drinking Drano. Come on. Do you know what?
Really?
Like, I've got a friend who's been militant about drinking Coke and Diet Coke and all those things for like, he was like that for years and every time, because I used to have a real Pepsi Max habit, like a one a day Pepsi Max habit.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, you can't drink that stuff. It's terrible for you, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, come on. It's like my one vice. I just don't have anything else that's bad. But yeah, I'm now that person going, you can't drink that stuff. It's just, I won't let anyone in my family drink it. If I see anyone doing it, I just want to kind of throw up, so we can talk about that later.
Oh good, yeah, don't take my Diet Coke away from me.
Looking forward to that conversation.
It's all I have.
So the fourth kind of lifestyle detox that we've tried and we do recommend is no screens for a weekend. Carly tends to do this when she goes camping. I really want Carly to try this when she's at
in real
home
life.
Because the last time we did this kind of detox, we did a digital detox and we did it over a weekend. Carly was like away on the farm somewhere and I'm like at home trying to like get through my regular stuff that I do during the day, but without being able to go on the internet or use my phone other than as a phone. And let's be honest, who uses their phone as a phone? Like,
No one. Losers.
And yeah, I found it really difficult. That said, it was really good to do because it showed me my twitchiness and it showed me how twitchy I was. And also in the absence of being able to use my phone, I read books and real books and I remembered how much I love reading real books. And actually that was the biggest change that digital detox did to me, because I'd become a real Kindle person. So reading books on my phone, and I was reading books on my phone at night. And that digital detox has got me back to, like, I pretty much only read real books now, and it's nice. It's nice. It helps me sleep better.
I can go computer-free and phone-free for a weekend. That's quite easy. Going completely screen-free is hard for me because I really enjoy watching things on Netflix and that kind of thing. So I struggle, and I don't spend when I'm watching TV, I'm always crocheting or I'm pottering or I'm doing something else. I'm an active TV watcher, so I don't feel like that's a detrimental thing to spend some time watching TV. So I will probably never do a completely screen-free weekend because I enjoy my wind down at the end of the day kind of a thing. But I do it when I camp. And we Ben and I also rented a camper van and traveled around New Zealand for 3 weeks. And the camper van didn't have a TV, so we would just read books every night and it was wonderful.
Yeah, it is good to do, but also hard to do, especially like the whole screen-free thing, like you crochet while you watch TV. I am on Twitter when I watch TV, so I've got two screens growing. Like that's bad. I've stopped doing that. So
you should learn to crochet, Kelly. I know of a really wonderful online.
Wait, what is it? Is it crochetcoach?
It's crochetcoach.com, guys. Yeah. If you want to learn to crochet, it's actually really good. Like I feel like my brain is less fuzzy because I'm not looking directly at the screen all night.
Yes, that's it. Okay, so the fifth lifestyle detox that we recommend is to take a break from toxic people. And this sounds like really how do you do this? But, and obviously it's not something where you go, right, well, I'm just going to have a break from toxic people. I'm not going to see this person even though they're expecting me to. But I think it's something you kind of almost have to do slowly where you go, okay, this person who I hang out with, be they a family member or a friend or a mum from school or something, they don't make me feel good about myself. They're either big complainers or they are on to me all the time, belittling me. You can step away from those people. And I think it's interesting. And it's quite like it can be like someone who's been a friend for a really long time and, you know, you've kind of outgrown the friendship, but you've been a friend with them for so long time, you keep going with it. You don't have to persist with those friendships. You're not obliged to. You can actually take a break from them. And if you allow yourself to take a break from it and then you see how much better about yourself you feel, you might feel that you keep going with that break. Like, have you ever had to kind of take a break from toxic people, Carl?
Yeah, I have. I'm pretty good at not letting toxic people in the first place. I'm pretty good at recognizing them. But yeah, sometimes I just, when I find that if I've been interacting with people and I leave those interactions feeling less positive than when I entered them, and that's a consistent thing. I think people do have bad days, and when you meet up with a friend and they make you feel like shit, you're kind of going, oh, that was unusual. But if that happens the next 3 or 4 times you see them, then that's when you kind of need to take a step back and take a break from them. I haven't had too many, you know, crazy incidences though, because I'm pretty good at not letting people like that in the first place.
Yeah, I'm a bit the same. I know how much you love personality types and all that stuff. But I was reading something about my personality type the other day, saying like my personality type is very hard to get in with INFJs because we'll let people like on the surface, but we're friendly and we love people and we keep, you know, we're quite happy to engage with people on the surface, but not two people get to go deep and into the inner circle. So I'm a bit like you. If someone's going to get into my inner circle, it's very, they got to work so hard. It's like no toxic person's going to do that work.
Yeah.
So I don't have to deal with it too often either. But yeah, it's more the peripheral kind of stuff. People that you come into contact via other people, I find, that's where I go, you know what, like, just hanging out with this person just makes me feel a bit shit, and I've got limited time on weekends to hang out with people. I'm going to choose to hang out with this person instead, like the one that makes me feel good about myself. Okay, so the next one is no complaining for however long, a week, a month, or, you know, if you're really struggling with this one, like a day. I find this, I don't feel like I'm a big complainer.
I don't think you are either.
I don't feel I am either, but I do this every so often. Like usually like I'll see someone else has done it and I'll go, oh yeah, you know, this might be a good thing to do for the next week just to be more aware of what I do. And it's not like big things. Like I'm not a big complainer, but I do complain about little stupid things. And it's interesting to just, that's what I find doing that little detox does, is it just makes me aware of like the stupid little things that get me and I complain about and it's not just complaining to other people, it's complaining internally as well. So yeah, if I catch myself, if I do this for a week or so, it's interesting to catch myself doing it and force myself to reframe it. I always find it a really useful exercise.
I think so too. So I had a thing that I wrote on my blog quite recently, and I'll pop the link into the group if someone reminds me to do it. But I did an activity where I had a piece of paper and I drew a line down the middle of it, and I wrote positive on one side and negative on the other. And every time I had an interaction, if it was just a thought that I had in my head, my own inner monologue, chatting to Ben, chatting to someone else, if it was a positive interaction, I'd put a tick in the positive box. Mm. If it was negative, I'd put a tick in the negative box. And then I found by lunchtime, I was swaying all of my conversation so that I could put more ticks in the positive box, which is actually really good because I was totally skewing my own data, but that was the whole point.
Yeah. Awareness and a mindfulness thing, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, most of the time I am quite positive. I'm in the business of being a positive person, but if too many negative things have happened in a week and I'm not feeling on top of my game, that starts coming into my language and it starts coming into my being, and I need to readjust that and change the way I'm feeling about things. I find that incredibly positive, and also like complaining less. That's never a bad thing.
No, I don't think so. I don't think we could argue that complaining less can have anything but a good effect on the people around us and on our own kind of mood. So number 7, a detox. And this one got like a ton of like big likes and yes, do this one in the group. And it was really interesting. So Josie suggested it, and she said, I want to put forth the idea of resisting making comments about women's bodies and appearance, both negative and positive. And actually, I would extend this to making comments about anybody's bodies and appearance, both negative and positive. And you know, she said, even trying to do it for a week, it makes you realize how often we make these comments and how ingrained it is into us, like even when we're referring to small babies and children. And I thought, like, I've not done this yet, but I just thought that is a brilliant idea. I think I'm more aware now of when I say things because I've got kids and I've got a little girl, and I'm very conscious of never belittling my own body in front of her. I'm very conscious of, never saying someone else is fat or just any of these things that are just such a part of the vernacular that we grew up with, like the constant commentary, and also the feeling that the commentary is appropriate. Like, where did we get the idea that it was appropriate to comment on other people's bodies and appearance and things, men or women? So yeah, I thought that was a really interesting suggestion, and I think that's like a detox we should all be doing for life, like not even for a week.
Yeah, I completely agree. I find that I want to comment on men less.
Yes.
If I notice that a man has lost or gained weight, I don't feel the need to tell him that.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I never feel the need to tell women if they've gained weight. But if I notice that a friend of mine, you know, has lost weight or is looking particularly good, I feel the need to always
acknowledge
it and point it out. And it's actually almost as worse as saying, because it's the whole thing is that like women are raised to feel like their looks are their biggest asset, and while we keep feeding that expectation with positive and negative feedback, it's just going to keep on that cycle of the expectation of women, you know, constantly like having to get their body back immediately after having a baby, or looking like they're 20 when they're actually 60. Every time you reward a woman for making an effort with her appearance to make herself look good with positive commentary, it's kind of a negative back in the opposite direction, because then, you know, you get that feedback and you constantly want that feedback and you're continually striving for it, when people should just be allowed to walk around and exist in the bodies they have. And our bodies change as well. So like sometimes you're in a really peak period of physical appearance and sometimes you're not. And it actually doesn't have a lot to do with youth. I mean, there have been times in my life where I've looked heaps worse than I do now and heaps better than I do now. And that's just going to keep on happening for the rest of my life. And it shouldn't have any effect on anything that I do. So
yeah, it shouldn't be cause for commentary. It's I'm very aware if I notice someone's lost weight, I try not to I actually, for a few years now, I've kind of not said anything about it. And then I kind of like feels bad that I haven't said anything about it. But then I don't want to go, isn't it fantastic that you've lost weight? Like it's the only thing that that counts. So, yeah, it's a difficult conversation.
See, I really struggle with that as well because, like, on the flip side of everything I just said, I've lost weight this year and people are starting to notice and I'm loving it because I worked really, really, really hard and it's working. But then I'm like, why do I care what other people think? I know I've lost weight. Yeah, it shouldn't. Yeah. But then also notice me.
It's like you want to know that people know, but you don't want them to comment on it because then what does that say about anything?
I kind of feel like it's a – read the situation kind of a thing. And, you know, my best mate will comment on it. And I love that.
Yeah.
But that's because she knows me and she's had the daily commentary of me being, you know, dietary changes and she's seen me go through the whole thing and, you know, and that's great. But I think it's, I don't know. It's all hard.
Difficult one. But yeah, ultimately I think, yeah, go back to the basics of what Josie said. And it's like, yeah, let's just not comment on other people's appearance, good or bad. Like,
And try doing it for a week just for awareness, if anything.
Yeah. And just, yeah, catch yourself doing it. So the eighth one is Paul suggested this was giving up watching the news and reading newspapers. And I have to say that I fully, fully endorse this, especially since I had kids. So what people have to understand about the news, because people will go, hang on a minute, well, how do you stay informed? Like, the news is not where you go to be informed. The news is where you go to find out what you should be afraid of right now, because that is what news plays on. So they don't give you good news stories. They don't give you bland stories. They only give you the things that are going to incite a strong emotion in you. That's just the reality of the situation. So, and you find this out when you have the news on and you have got kids in the room and then you look at what's on the TV and you think, hang on a minute, my kids should not be seeing this stuff. Like, they don't need to know about all these things that, you know, the shooting that happened here and the car that drove into people here. And like, we will find this stuff out through our own networks. We don't need to watch the news to find these things out. So, yes, I completely endorse that because I know that I can get a read on what's happening in the world in a far less sensationalist manner by going on Twitter as opposed to, yeah, watching the nightly news.
I tend to stick to SBS. So at the end of the day, Ben and I clock off from work because we work from home. So we clock off and we do the 5:30 crossover and we turn the news on and watch SBS while we finish up the last of our work. And I just find it's, very even-handed and
– this is true, yes.
Yeah. And it's also less racist. Like they cover, big disasters in all areas of the world, not just America.
Yeah, that's right. So, yes, so either give up the news or only watch SBS if you are in Australia. Julie made a suggestion, a detox suggestion or a lifestyle detox suggestion, which was giving up negative comments towards your partner. So she said she did a 30-day challenge once to only say things positively to her partner, and it was great for her mindset and satisfaction with their marriage. So I'm conflicted with this. Because I'm the kind of person that I feel like if there's something that needs to be said, then say it. You know, if your partner's pissing you off, they kind of need to know. That said, research has shown that the number one relationship killer is contempt. So, and I think there's a big difference between simply letting your partner know that something they said was hurtful or hauling them up on a bit of behavior that you thought was inappropriate and being contemptuous of them, which is where like you roll your eyes at everything they say or, you kind of like will go oof every time they, do or say something. So I think almost like, sure, give up negative comments towards your partner and give that a go and see if that's helpful. But I almost think like it's more useful to give up contempt or rolling your eyes at your partner. I'm a terrible eye roller and it drives Ant mental, and fair enough too. It should drive him mental. So yeah, I would almost have to give up like rolling my eyes or just like the thing that I do now, which is where I don't roll my eyes, but the way that I look at him is basically rolling my eyes. I know that I do it. And that's like kind of my little secret rebel where I'm just like, okay, you hate me rolling your eyes, my eyes at you, so I won't do it, but I'm going to do this instead. I should not do that. And like I said, yeah, we need to be careful about how we slip into patterns of behavior with our partners, and we kind of expect them to put up with it because, you know, they love us and we love them and they should know that. But yeah, we do have to be careful about certain interactions that can, yeah, make the other person feel really bad. And we think, oh, you know we love them. They'll put up with it, and they shouldn't have to put up with that.
I'm trying to comment on this like without sounding like a smug jerk, but Ben and I don't really fight very often, and I don't say anything negative to him because he's kind of a perfect human. Like, I know that sounds really ridiculous. I know that sounds terrible, but he's he has his faults and everything, but
nothing that makes on a you base just level, go. Do you? No. So what you're saying is you do not ever roll your eyes at Ben?
No. No, not really.
You are a perfect human as well. You guys have a lovely relationship. Can I just say I have a lovely relationship too, but I do – I'm just a terrible eye roller. It's not just an ant. Like, I roll my eyes in my head but not physically at a lot of things and a lot of people, and it's something, yeah. Maybe that's what I should just give up, eye rolling across the board.
No, I think – I do think Ben and I are quite unusual, and I think that I was chatting to my family about this, and they were each talking about how like amongst my cousins and my aunties and my uncles, there's kind of like one person who's the adult and one person who's the child in all of the relationships, and they were pointing out which one was the adult and which one was the child. And they got to Ben and I and they went, wow, two adults in the same relationship. Wow, what's amazing. That like? And we were just kind of like, because we take care of each other, but there's not one person who is in charge. And I just know that there are a lot of relationships where one person would fail to thrive without the other. And that's not the case. I'm not saying that, you know, Ant would just like sit in a room and cry if you left. But there does seem to be – most relationships tend to have someone who's sort of a bit more the boss, and it's Ben and I don't have that, and it's very weird. But yeah, I sound like a smug asshole, and I'm very sorry.
Yeah, you totally do, but that's okay. We forgive you because we know your heart's in the right place. No, I envy that. I love the idea of two adults in a relationship. I'm quite jealous of that. Not saying that as a child, but he can be when he wants to be. Only because I am the person that has to have everything done a certain way, and his standards are way lower. So.
Look, sometimes it's not even that the child in the relationship is the child. It's just that the other person happens to be the adult, and then that person defaults to being the child. Yeah,
and that's, I think.
So it's not, yeah, I think that's your relationship. I don't think Ant's necessarily hopeless. It's just you're kind of going, well, I'm the boss.
I care about this stuff. And that's the way. You don't, so I'll take the lead on it. Yeah. Cool. And now the final one, which I quite love, the final little detox you can do is the availability detox. And this is where you just make yourself unavailable to people for one day a week. So there's a few different ways of doing this. So you could do it like on a work day and you're unavailable by, say, email to people. So, you know, if people want to contact you, they have to call you, but you're not answering emails today. And that, as much as that sounds unrealistic, it totally can be, because you shouldn't always have to answer emails on the same day that you get them. People can wait a day. And the other thing is you could try it on a weekend with your family, where you say to your kids, for example, I am unavailable to make decisions for you this weekend. If you need a decision made, go to your dad. So yeah, what do you think about this one?
I love it. I ended up doing this one quite by accident. So because I work for different clients, and, you know, I have two businesses. So sometimes I have days that are Smaggle, and some days I have, you know, days that are Crochet Coach. And if I'm working for another client, I won't engage with any clients who aren't on that day. So some clients, I just block out a whole day to work for them, you know, in the week. And if another client tries to contact me, I just won't reply to them until it's their day. And then I'll be like, well, it's your day today, so, you know, you can call me and do that. And it works really well, and people really seem to respect that. And if someone needs a meeting, I'll say, look, I have client work on today, but I can have a meeting with you at 5. And I dictate the times when
it's boundary setting, isn't it? It's really effective boundary setting. And people do respond really well to boundaries when you give them boundaries to respond to.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Okay, so that's our 10 lifestyle detoxes that we feel everyone should try at least once. The reason we did that episode today is because we have got a book out at the moment. It's called A Real Life Approach to Diet and and Lifestyle Detoxes. And in the book, we cover off in detail giving up alcohol for a month, giving up coffee for a month, and then the digital detox that we did as well, in amongst the other diet stuff in there as well. It's a great way for you to support the show if you like what we do and you would like our shows to remain as ad-free as possible. You can find the book at straightandcurly.com/book. And yeah, as we said, it just helps support the show and pay for our production costs, and we would be ever so grateful if you were able to purchase it.
Thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.